From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation or on the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, those open lines is what's happening. Islamic State militants are the most dangerous threat to America that we have faced in years, according to top U.S. officials. Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel said U.S. strikes had weakened ISIS in Iraq, but that the group could be expected to regroup. They are very funded. America's top general, Martin Dempsey, says that the fighters could not be defeated without attacking the base in Syria. And all this talk that they may want to take out an American city. In addition to that, more than 191,000 people have been killed in the Syrian conflict up to April, according to the UN Human Rights Chief. Let's check in with Craig Hewlett, of course, an expert on world affairs. Craig, I need to get your reaction to this entire story. First of all, do you believe it, that ISIS is truly a threat to us?
Apocalyptic, end-of-days strategic vision beyond anything we have ever seen, an imminent threat to our very existence. Beyond just a terrorist group, we must prepare for everything. That's what Chuck Hagel and Martin Dempsey have said. It's lies. All of it's lies. Saudi Arabia and the al-Sabah family of Kuwait have been funding ISIS for over a decade. It was reported by Edward Snowden and Glenn Greenwald. The whole world press has been talking about it forever. They are no threat whatsoever. In fact, I'll put it this personal. Me and Colonel Bob Brown of Soldier of Fortune magazine, who's a good friend of mine, we could put together, maybe 10,000 Texas Rangers and kick their butt.
Gee, so why is this talk? I mean, why is Hagel saying this? And then this report today about they're going to take out Chicago.
Yeah, it's 9/11 all over again. Isn't it a coincidence that all this is taking place while a court has ordered Obama to release the 28 pages that proves that Saudi Arabia financed the 9/11 attacks on the Twin Towers? Saudi Arabia is funding ISIS. Without Saudi and al-Sabah family funding, ISIS wouldn't exist. What's going on is an extended from 9/11. We have not managed to achieve, Americans and British have not managed to achieve, the strategic objectives of the Saudi regime in the Middle East. And that's what they're doing now. They're trying to get us to achieve that strategic objective that we failed to achieve on the heels of 9/11 that the Saudis financed.
All right, my friend, I hope you are right on this one. I truly do. What a situation this could be. About 2.2 million beanbag chairs are being recalled after two children opened them, crawled inside, and suffocated to death. The U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission said that the zippers on the chairs, which are made by a company, can open. A 13-year-old boy from Texas and a 3-year-old girl from Kentucky were found dead inside the chairs after they suffocated from a lack of air and inhaled the chair's foam beads. What a horrible story. The chairs were sold at Bonton, Meijer, Pamada, School Specialty, Wayfair, Walmart stores, online at Amazon.com, Meijer.com, Walmart.com. They cost between $30 and $100, and they were sold before July of 2013. They come in all different colors, shapes, fabrics, and sizes. Parents take heed on that story. A new report claims that Russian scientists have discovered traces of marine life living on the outside of the International Space Station. How in the heck can that happen? The official in charge of Russia's ISS segment told the news agency TASS that tiny plankton and microscopic organisms had been discovered on the spacecraft's exterior, describing the finds as absolutely unique. However, the authenticity of the claim is unclear, with NASA, of course, refusing to confirm the story. As far as we're concerned, they say, we haven't heard any official reports. What else is going on in the skies these days? Let's check in with Peter Davenport from the National UFO Center. Hey, Peter, what do we have?
Well, good evening, George. I gather we may both be traveling tonight. I don't know where you are, but I'm in lovely downtown Walla Walla for the first time in my life, down here for a political gathering.
Well, I'm in your old neck of the woods, St. Louis.
Yeah, I figured you were probably still back there. When I do these reports, I usually have the luxury of having a computer sitting in front of me. I don't have that luxury tonight, so I'm going to have to wing it. Let's see how I can do. Very interesting report from Seattle last Saturday night, the 16th of August. A gentleman was driving south on Interstate 5 from Shoreline, a very well-known well-known community in Seattle. He saw ahead of him to the south a cluster of red or yellow lights. The reason I find those interesting is the next day I got a call from a gentleman who was driving north. He was near Northgate. This is only about 6 or 8 miles north of the Space Needle in Seattle, and he saw 6 or 8 lights, orange or yellow. They both described them identically, and the gentleman driving north said that the objects were maneuvering relative to one another, so they weren't just hot air balloons drifting in the night sky. Tuesday of this week, I got a very interesting report from a gentleman in Boston. He was standing on a balcony holding his cat while he smoked. He was overlooking Copley Square, and he saw a round blue light that was spinning off white sparks or somehow fragments of white light. Very interesting sighting. And all of those sighting reports are now posted to our website. We just posted about 214 recently received reports. Two nights ago, a gentleman in Menard, Texas. This is a landmark case, George, because it's the first time, I believe I'm correct in saying, the first time I've received a report from a federal special agent and special investigator. He was sitting outside talking on his telephone at 9:40 p.m. Great witness. He recorded everything impeccably accurately. He saw a very, very large red object just appear in the night sky above his head. Was moving, didn't last for very long, and when the red light extinguished, he saw a couple of white lights that were orbiting around it or moving around it in some fashion. This morning, very interesting report from Maryland. Don't have it posted yet, don't have the written report yet, but a gentleman was driving to work. He saw a rectangle fly right over his car. Jeez. Had red lights on opposite corners and green lights on the other two corners. We'll have that report posted probably in the upcoming week, but been a very active week, and I'll keep people posted on what's going on.
Peter, I think it would be exciting to be in your car and you see what could very well be a UFO fly right over you.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened this morning in Maryland, according to this gentleman. He struck me as a very no-nonsense, very eloquent type witness. That's always a good sign, George, and he gave us a very, very good report. He promised he'd submit a written report. We should have that in the next day or two, but he said he was just thunderstruck. He's never seen anything like it. When he first saw it, the headlight on the object was so bright, he thought an airliner was setting up to land on the highway that he was driving on. Then when it went over his head, he got a better look at it. Very, very good report. We'll have that posted very soon.
Super. Peter, have yourself a great weekend. When we come back, freezing people is not easy. It's an incredible story on Cryonics, next on Coast to Coast AM. Well, welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie. A long time ago in a far-off place, Bob Nelson happened upon a book, The Prospect of Immortality. It changed his life. He became fascinated by cryonics, a process in which the body temperatures lowered during the beginning of the dying process to keep the brain intact. The ultimate goal is to reanimate the patient at a later date. And when a cure for his or her disease has been discovered, well, they might be able to revive them. Bob was the founder and president of the first Cryonic Society of California. He froze the first man in 1967, Bob Nelson, on Coast to Coast. Hey, Bob, this is fascinating. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. Pleasure to be here, my friend.
So the person who was frozen in 67, is he still frozen?
Yes, he's been frozen for 47 years, and he was a psychology professor at Glendale College.
What happened to him?
Well, he was dying of cancer, and he was very interested in the science of cryonics, and he just wanted to be the first man, and he was.
Now, when you froze him, I mean, was he almost dead or did he die?
Yeah. No. Well, death is a process that takes hours to complete. Clinical death, the very first phase, people are often resuscitated from that stage of death. But according to the law, that is legal death, and that is when you can begin to do the freezing process. You cannot do it before, but once the heart stops beating, that's clinical death, and that is when he began to be prepared for low temperature storage.
And what are the possibilities, Bob, realistically, do you think you could get him revived and see if you can cure him of cancer?
Well, you know, I think for Dr. Bedford, and before he died, I got to talk to him for just a minute, a couple of days before he passed. And he said to me, Bob, he says, I don't really expect to be resuscitated myself. He said, I think the science is too new. But I hope that for my children or my grandchildren, cryonics may be able to extend their life. So to answer your question, I would be not too optimistic for Dr. Bedford, but for the 300 or so people that have been frozen and are in cryonic suspension today, the odds are much, much greater because the procedures and the technology has advanced so much that, people like Simon Cowell, Larry King, Paris Hilton, have all publicly stated that they intend to be suspended.
How about that? Ted Williams, he's at Alcor, I think. They've got his head.
Yeah. Yeah, that's Alcor. Alcor does that. The Cryonic Institute, which I'm a member of, thinks that's really bad public relations. So we don't do that at CI, but the scientific technology of freezing just the head, it does make a lot of sense because with the cloning world now, it's very conceivable that with a single cell we could grow a body and attach the head.
Next hour, your co-authors Kenneth Bly and Sally Magana will join us. Magana, and your book Freezing People is Not Easy, but a long time ago, as I was mentioning, Bob, you did pick up a book, of course, called The Prospect of Immortality by Professor Robert Edinger. And tell me, how did that influence you? How did that get you fascinated with cryonics?
Well, when I grew up a wannabe astronomer. That was my love, and it still is to this day. And so I was pretty familiar with suspended animation as a science that hopefully would be perfected. So what Robert Ettinger wrote about was cryonic suspension or suspended animation. And it was just unbelievable, but it made perfect sense. And you'd have to read the beautiful writing of this man. He was a physics professor. And he built such a case for the inevitability of this that I found it riveting. So I bought three books, and I took them to three of the most brilliant people that I knew because I was obsessed with it, and asked them to please read it and give me their opinion. And all three of them said, makes perfect sense, perfect logic, and sign me up. So, I think Robert Ettinger is equivalent to Einstein.
Tell us a little bit about cryonics and how it works.
Well, the ideal preparation for a patient would be to be under a control condition where as soon as the heart stops, the patient can begin to be covered with ice and the body temperature lowered. Because when you lower the body temperature, you lower the metabolism. And reduced metabolism is the science that governs this kind of life. For example, the marmot, which is an animal that's probably the greatest hibernator there is, their heart ordinarily beats 300 times a minute. But when you lower the temperature and they hibernate, their heart beats three times a minute. so they can come so close to death, but then resuscitate. And with a human being, the procedure would be to remove the blood and replace it with a biological antifreeze. And that would provide protection to keep the cell damage to a very minimum. And then the temperature is further lowered down to minus 320 degrees using a refrigerant of liquid nitrogen to maintain the person at that lower temperature, which for all practical purposes, time ceased to exist. The person could, I mean, Dr. Bedford, for example, right now, he's been in there 47 years, but biologically, it would only be a matter of seconds. That's how much time would have been gone biologically to him at that temperature.
If you were to take a hammer in that freezing condition and whack the person's arm or something, would it break off?
Yes, it would be like glass.
Oh, boy. Okay.
It would be like glass, yeah.
So you got to be really careful.
Yeah. Well, they are. The for the Alcor Foundation has wonderful the cylinders that the cryogenic cylinders that the people are placed in, and they're secured. And the Alcor and the Cryonic Institute offer free exhibits to come and take a look, and you'll absolutely be amazed at the existence of this facility and the sincerity of the people that you know that work in them and commit to this scientific program of extending the human life. You know, compared to the lifespan of man, to the eons of time that have passed and will come to pass, it's like a microsecond. And I believe that if through creation we should learn how to extend that microsecond to a few minutes, I don't think our Creator would mind. So I think the science of and technology of cryonics is very sound now. The Cryobiology Society of America in the very beginning was against cryonics because not a single organ, male, animal, or human, had ever been frozen. But the 21st century medicine froze a rabbit kidney and revived it. And now there's no comment out of them. So
no.
We're getting close.
What does it cost to freeze someone, let's say, per year? Because, you know, obviously, who knows how long they'll be frozen.
Yeah. Well, the for example, at the Cryonic Institute, it costs $28,000, and that will take care of you in perpetuity, forever.
Okay.
The actual cost...
That's almost as cheap as a funeral.
Yeah, yeah. The actual cost to maintain a body... I got from the facility is about $100 a year, because what they have is a facility that holds 8 patients at one time, and then they have an enormous vessel out back full of liquid nitrogen, and utilizing that combination of multiple people, they're able to get the cost down to $100 a year. So that's amazing, and it's a beautiful facility. It is, but it's getting filled up. There's close to 300 people frozen now.
Jeez.
With probably about 4,000 others, including myself, that have made arrangements to be cryonically suspended.
When do you make the decision to unfreeze the person and to try to, medically treat him?
Well, I think that will come when we are able to... freeze and resuscitate a person, on as everyday medicine. These are questions that don't have solid answers today. But, there's so much, Dr. Sanjay Gupta has a new book out called Cheating Death. And it is absolutely amazing. He talks about going to the Fred Hutchinson Cancer Research Center and watching Dr. Mark Roth, who has found a chemical that will take a rat, which is a non-hibernator, and instantly put him into hibernating. So it may be that at some point in time before we revive people like Dr. Bedford, that people that are have not gone all the way down to minus 320.
That's amazing. Hey, Bob, stay with us. We're going to hit this break, but we'll be right back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, we're with Bob Nelson, author of Freezing People Is Not Easy. We'll be joined next hour with his two co-authors, Kenneth Bly and Sally Magana, as well as we talk about cryonics. I've been fascinated, Bob, since I was a kid with cryonics, ever since I heard about it. Just a fascinating concept. And
yeah, you know, in my book, I cover the different disciplines that allow us to time travel into the future. Nature has made many different mechanisms. One of the most interesting is the African lungfish. This is a fish that normally hibernation is triggered by cold. They live in Lake Tanganyika, and this fish is probably about 3 feet in length. And when the lake dries up, as it does every 5 years, this fish bars down into the mud and secretes a gelatin over its body, and triggered by heat, it goes into chemical anabiosis, which is a reduction in metabolism, much like hibernation, and it can stay in this dormant condition for 5 years. Probably another amazing example is the Siberian salamander, which is about a 6 or 7 inch lizard-like creature. That quite frequently gets caught in a solid block of ice and can stay in there up to 10 years, solidly frozen, you know. So nature has given us so many examples of different mechanisms to suspend life. And that was the big question for me when I read Ettinger's book was, is it possible to suspend life and to resuscitate it? And the answer is a resounding absolutely yes, and we have many examples of it. So we're looking for people to join in with us and get busy with this exciting science.
Let's talk about a couple cases about the first woman ever suspended.
Yeah.
And tell me about the circumstances of that situation, Bob.
Well, I'd like to tell you about that was Marie Sweet, and then I'd also like to tell you about the first child. Because
okay, sure. We'll do them both.
Okay. Marie Sweet was a very, very well-known woman who championed many, many causes. And she was in her 70s, and she was working with us for the first cryonic convention we had here in Los Angeles. And she came down from Santa Barbara, and she had a heart attack in her room, and no one knew. So she was like maybe a day and a half before she finally got brought to a funeral director, and she had a medical alert bracelet, which we recommend, and they called us, and so at the cryonics office, we got this call that Marie Sweet was at the mortuary, and we picked her up, and our mortician at the time was out of town, so we took her into the cryonics office and wasn't sure whether or not it was appropriate after that length of time to cool her down, but we did, and she was about 2 days before she was suspended. And but more interestingly is the child, the freezing of Genevieve de la Poitre, a 7-year-old Canadian girl.
7 years. And how did she die?
She had, we went to Canada to try to talk the hospital into cooperating with suspending her, and they wouldn't do it. But she had what's called a Wilms tumor, which at that time there was absolutely no treatment for it. It was inevitable. The lifespan was about 90 days. And so they told her father to send her home, that she had about a month to live. And her father instead brought her to California and to the Children's Hospital. And here the Children's Hospital cooperated completely. And today, a Wilms tumor, no child dies from a Wilms tumor. And there's an example of the logic behind cryonics. this child today we couldn't resuscitate her because we don't have the technology to reverse the freezing process. At least the Wilms tumor, which took her life, is now treatable. And that was a heartache that, that child missed out.
Well, any time a child goes, it's a heartache for sure.
Yeah. But anyway, in my book, I go through all of the different suspended animation, chemical anabiosis, hibernation, supercooling, and the different animals and the different creatures that do precisely this. They time travel into the future by lowering metabolism. The very first example that I ever, that convinced me after reading Ettinger's book, because I had to see something suspended. And I was in a pet shop, and I saw on the counter a card with a display of sea monkeys. And it said, just put them in water, and they come to life. And I went, what? So I had my little girl with me, and we bought some. We took them home, put them in a little aquarium. And I didn't say anything, and I thought, what a bunch of nonsense. About an hour later, there was about 200 little brine shrimps swimming around. And they will stay in this dormant state for about 5 years. All you do is put them in water. That was a microscopic example of what really suspended animation is about. But it was enough to convince me this is something that I need to investigate. This is something that I need to learn about. And, we're not talking immortality when we talk cryonics. We're talking about just greatly extended life. The life of the early human beings was about 20 years. Today, the average person lives into their 80s. The oldest woman was a French lady at 124. And real quick, I got an interesting thing on CNN News a couple of weeks ago about a man who was working in his garden, and the news crew came up on him. They had prepared this, and he was an 85-year-old man, and he was out there working and carrying dirt. And they come up and said to him, "My God, Mr. Watson, how old are you, and how do you stay in such wonderful condition?" And he looked at the camera and he says, "Well, you know, I don't know. Why don't we go in the house and ask my mother?" His mother was 113, and the lifespan of human beings is definitely going to be increasing.
Sure.
Have you heard of the story of Brooke Greenberg?
Brooke Greenberg? No, I have not.
Brooke Greenberg, little girl who is 3 years old and 20 years old at the same time.
How could she be 3 and 20?
Well, I've got a picture, a photograph, if I could show it to you. She has three sisters, and her sisters are holding her up, and she's 3 years old, a three-year-old little girl. But she never grew. She never changed. She lived to be 20 years old. She just died a couple of years ago. And she never biologically changed from a three-year-old child, but yet was 20. And the gerontology world was absolutely, and still is absolutely, dumbfounded, because it means there must be some kind of a gene that can change the biological of aging. And the point I'm making is that science is miraculous. The discoveries that in my lifetime, the discoveries I've seen from cloning to heart transplants to organ banking to, my God, it just goes on and on. And what's the next 50 years going to bring? That's the one thing we can be sure about. The most natural order of life is change.
Bob, let me ask you about quality of life, though. I can understand trying to bring back to life a little three-year-old girl or a seven-year-old girl or a 20-year-old person or a 40-year-old person.
Right, but right.
Somebody in their 70s and 80s, they had a pretty good life.
Excellent question. That's why every person, including me, I have stated in my instructions for reanimation, do not resuscitate me simply because you can, unless you can rejuvenate me and make me younger and healthier. Leave me in suspension until you can do that. So who wants to be an old man, be frozen? I'm 77 right now. And, I'm hurting. I just had a new hip put in and it's going to get worse. So for my suspension, when I experience it, clearly my instructions are, don't resuscitate me until you can reanimate me and I can be a healthy, wealthy guy.
Well, what I would consider doing, though, is if they ever get to the point where they can download memory on a chip and then clone humans, I would entertain the possibility of, downloading that memory into the new human who would be me. And then there you are.
That's another approach to the same end, I think it's going to have to. Will be a little further down the line, but the point is, you may not be able to wait for that. So you got to take what you can get today, and hope that you can. It just really bothers me that I live at an age, that I'm not into that biological discovery. Benjamin Franklin, in the preface of my first book, We Froze the First Man, about freezing Dr. Bedford, I got a preface in there by Benjamin Franklin where he talks about having a glass of wine, and as he poured the wine, three flies fell out onto the table. and he had heard stories about the flies can resuscitate. So he put them in the sun, and an hour later, two of them had revived and flew away.
Amazing.
And he said, by fear I lived at too early a day to participate in this, but how wonderful it would be if I could be reanimated, in some way. So it's amazing to think that Benjamin Franklin, my God, back in those days, he was thinking the way that I'm thinking today. Freeze, wait, reanimate.
Did you build some kind of a storage unit for frozen bodies?
Yes, well, I had we went ahead and we froze the first man, the first woman, and the first child. And we built an underground vault in a cemetery. That was a nightmare of a job to find a cemetery that would allow us to come in and build a vault underground to keep frozen patients. I mean, every cemetery thought we was just nuts. And finally, I got the one in Chatsworth that was a real gentleman, and he was a futuristic thinker, and he said, go ahead, do it. So we built the vault, but, in the beginning, in the very beginning of everything, you learn. And so we built the vault, and we were very, very low in money and funds, and the vault was underground, and it started leaking and bringing in water, and it was just an expensive nightmare. Anyway, eventually the facility in Chatsworth, I made some very serious mistakes with we froze eight people, and six of those people had no money, and I couldn't say no. And I took on the responsibility for keeping them in suspension until I could find a way, to raise the money.
Out of your own pocket.
Yeah, I never could find the money, and we finally ran out of funds. So when we built the vault, we built it with the consideration that we may run into problems and we may have to give it up. And if we did, at least these people were respectively interred. And that is what happened, and I took a lot of flack over that. But, I made a Herculean effort to get this thing off the ground. And but one of the things that really bothered me is the secretary of the Cryonic Society, Dick Jones, who is now frozen himself, all the years that I knew him, he He told me that he was broke. He drove a car that you had to get on a passenger side because he had an accident on that side.
Then
he was a multimillionaire.
You're kidding me.
He had $5 million, and he gave him over $1.5 million to the Alcor Foundation, and that's what started them.
But he never fixed his car.
No. He, I don't know.
He was must have been a little senile.
But he was a young guy, and he was a comedian. He was wonderful. I don't know. I could never figure it out. I loved him, but to think that he would let my facility and my people get lost when he's sitting on $5 million, I could never figure that out. But
was the wonderful Walt Disney once frozen? I keep hearing stories.
Yeah, no. When we after the freezing of Dr. Bedford. Well, no, it was actually before that we had a cryonics office. We had a wealthy lady who donated a suite of 7 rooms in Westwood for 3 years. And that was one of the women I gave the book to, the Prospect of Immortality. And she was so gung-ho on it. She said, sign me up, and here, you can have these offices for 3 years. But anyway, while we were there, I got a call one day from Walt Disney Studios. They had 3 questions. They wanted to know how many people had been frozen, where our facilities were, and what the doctors that we were connected with, who they were.
Who were they? Yeah.
And we had none of those. We didn't have any. We never froze anybody. We didn't have a vault. We didn't have any doctors. So, can you imagine, though, if Walt Disney had been suspended, my God, where the technology in the world would be.
Well, can you imagine
today?
if you had brought him back to life? Creative genius all over again. Uh-huh. My gosh.
Yeah. Well, with cloning, that may be there may be some thoughts of that. You never know.
Well, I really believe one day they're going to be able to download memory on a computer chip. I really think they're going to be able to do that.
Yeah.
And really, Bob, that's what, outside of the soul, that's a different subject altogether. We really are just a process of our brain and our memory. That's who we are.
That's right.
That's what your memory stored everything. You remember things. And, outside of that, we're just, flesh and arms, legs, organs, and things like that. So if you can download the memory and then upload it into somebody's head, look out. You've got them all over again.
It's give you an example about this. When my first book, We Froze the First Man, I sold it to Bill Cannon. He was he had done a couple of movies, and he was writing a screenplay on that book. And one day we're talking, and he's talking about cloning, and I said, cloning, what is that? And he explained it to me, and I remember saying this to him, Bill, that's nonsense. Don't, I'm not a flying saucer watcher, and don't talk to me about such nonsense as cloning. And then, I can't believe it. They cloned Dolly the sheep, so and nothing.
And I'm convinced that there are people that have been cloned. They've probably just kept it quiet, or they experimented for sure.
Well, it's certainly on the way, and... change is the most natural order in our universe. When I was a kid, I was told the only thing that you can be sure of is death and taxes. But you can be sure even more than that change.
Well, when you did this 47 years ago, have you seen a technological change that makes it even better now, cryonics?
Oh, I do. Just the fact that when the capsules that I had my people in, where ancient, like old Model T Fords, you had to keep a vacuum pump running on them, and the liquid nitrogen boiled away. And today, the capsules that are in Alcor, they don't need any pumps. They're upright, vertical capsules, and they're trouble-free. There's no problem.
Well, Bob, stay with us. Sally's going to join us next, one of your co-authors on Coast to Coast AM.